The succeeding swarm of divine sparks receives the impression of the modified locoidal consciousness, as previously explained, and therefore starts upon its evolution with an elaborate reactionary capacity already developed. The matter of each plane, having been used to build forms of a certain type, retains the reaction capacity of that type after the forms have been disintegrated, and therefore assembles into smaller forms with a greater readiness each time it is called upon to repeat the process until finally it holds these forms of its own organized forces. Thus, subsequent life waves are compelled to use these forms and are conditioned thereby. This is retrogressive, because each life wave, having performed epigenesis, is more highly elaborated than its predecessor, and therefore cannot enter the same mold without deformity. This matter will be referred to again when considering the problem of evil. It must then be realized that each unit of a life swarm has, inherent in its nature, the reaction capacities of a cosmos in its simplicity, and of all preceding life swarms in their complexity. Therefore, though fundamentally it has a perfect simplicity of principle, it has an infinite complexity of reaction capacity. The cosmic principles are known and are constant. To these each human soul is obedient as to the fundamental laws of its nature. But the reactions of epigenesis cannot be calculated in relation to individuals because of their complexity, and the number of possible modifying factors. They can only be calculated in relation to evolutions because the number gives the average. Hence it is that epigenesis introduces the element known as free will, and free will, in the interval between its development and its synthesis to the logos, gives rise to the positive evil of the manifested universe. The teaching of the last two lectures was devoted to a consideration of the extra-universal influences. We are now in a position to consider the intra-universal influences. Let it be borne in mind that the extra-universal influences firstly are of two types: the cosmic influences which act upon the logos, and to which the logos reacts, thus undergoing the changes. These changes, being reflected upon the manifested universe as variations and phases of the locoidal influences. The locoidal influences are not constant, though true to type. This is an important point in which esoteric theology differs from exoteric theology, which conceives of a God as changeless, whereas esoteric theology conceives of God as himself evolving, and as subject to mutation, according to law. Secondly, the locoidal influences change owing to modifications in the locoidal nature produced by his reactions to the evolution of the universe. Thus, we may say that the locoidal influences playing upon the manifested universe vary in these two ways, and these have to be reckoned within all calculations of the influences to which evolving humanity is subject, and they can be calculated in the cosmic type by means of the equinoxes and the comets, and the evolutionary reaction type by calculating the curve and studying the phases of the biological history. We will now proceed to deal with the conditions in the manifested universe subject to which man carries on his evolution. It will have been perceived, from a study of the foregoing chapters, that all action and reaction which is regular, becomes cyclic, according to the law of universal curvature, and that cyclic reaction makes a track in space and thus becomes stereotyped. So that the manifested universe is at any given time a set of molecules and atoms held together by a framework of tracks in space. In other words, the organized manifestation of the one existence are simply a set of stereotyped reactions of which the tracks in space form the abstract mold. The idea of the abstract mold is an important one and should be borne in mind. These sets of stereotyped reactions are of many different types, and they can be distinguished according to the mode of their origin. Some were left behind by the Lords of Flame in the course of their evolution, others by the Lords of Form and others by the Lords of Mind, and each of these sets of stereotyped reactions form the natural laws which govern the manifestations of those particular kinds of forms and activities which were built up in the course of that evolution, and these form the distinctions between one kind and another. But as each evolution makes use of the creations of its predecessor, the reaction types of that predecessor will be found inherent in the successors, though the analytical mind can dissect them not. They also, however, exist as independent substrata, and it is the knowledge of the method of manipulating these the elemental essences of each kingdom which is the basis of practical magic, and remember that each type of manifestation has its elemental essence. You will recall that each phase of the manifested universe was built up in turn, and that these phases form the fields of development of subsequent life waves. It therefore follows that each life wave, at each phase of its evolution will be conditioned by the conditions of the plane upon which that is undergone. Therefore an understanding of the planes is essential to an understanding of the problems of evolution, and of initiation, which is simply condensed evolution. The laws of the first, or physical, plane are being worked out by means of the five physical senses which relate to that plane, and are well known to you under the generic name of natural science. Though why man should consider one of the planes of his existence natural and the rest unnatural is a strange fruit of epigenesis. These conditions, so far as the inanimate world is concerned, have been well and truly observed, and subject to these laws, life will proceed with its evolution upon the physical plane. But scientific thought has made a mistake in believing that these laws are all there are, and this mistake has vitiated the last 100 years of science. The ancients were wiser but not so well informed. Certain schools of religious philosophy, however, make the opposite mistake and believe that life can work out its evolution regardless of the laws of the physical plane. This also is a mistake. The forces of a plane are supreme upon their own plane. Controllers of the plane below and, when in contact with the plane above, are in their turn controlled. For example, the laws of logic are supreme in the realm of mind. The images of mind control the forms of the emotions, but the images of mind are themselves controlled by the spiritual forces. Each plane is capable of independent function, or of function in circuit. But as soon as the planes are put in circuit, it is necessary that the current should be completed by uniting the arc upon the seventh plane, otherwise the open arc will short to the left-hand path. For example, should the trained mind learn to control the body of emotions, and the body of emotions learn to control the physical vehicle, you have an arc in function of which one half is conscious or negative, and the other half subconscious or positive, and the subconscious always gives the stimulus. If that arc be not completed into a circuit by junction through the locoidal image on the seventh plane, it will short from conscious to subconscious upon the fourth or fifth according to type, and the subconscious being the positive or stimulator will assume the control. Now the subconscious was built up in the past, therefore the past will assume control. The past lies to the left. That man will then return to an earlier phase of evolution and will be actuated by its motives while retaining the faculties of a later form of evolution. Though these motives are adequate to the control of the simple faculties of that phase, they are inadequate to the control of the complex faculties of a later phase, and that man becomes a danger to evolution by destroying the poise of the group soul of which he is a member and, as it will be remembered, it is the function of the entities evolved in earlier life waves to adjust the balance of compensating forces of the universe. He will be dealt with by the destroyers and will be reduced to his lowest common denominator. That is to say, his later faculties will be taken from him and he will be left only with those faculties suited to his impulses. Certain types of mischievous malicious idiots are produced in this way. Chapter 22. Influences of the manifested universe, plane conditions, and planetary spirits. The doctrine of the planes cannot be understood without the doctrine of the planetary spirits. Let it be remembered that a planetary spirit was evolved with the development of each plane, but that as the planetary spirit itself was developed at the time that the plane was being evolved, its highest aspect will be of the subtlest aspect of the matter of that plane. Thus the subtlest aspect of the earth is etheric. It is a plane of forms without intelligence. Each planetary spirit then is the archetype of the life of its plane, and it is the great dominating influence of that plane. In the course of the evolutionary tides, however, matter of the planes below is gathered about that planetary spirit, thus forming shells or bodies for it. But the matter of the planes above is not accreted. For these elements in its nature, it depends upon the influences from superior planes which act upon its atmosphere, and that element in its atmosphere is more directly supplied by the corresponding aspects in the lives inhabiting its sphere. Thus the planetary spirit is as a group soul of that plane on which it functions through the planes below it to the dense physical with which it has been supplied, but the elements of the plane above it, which serve it as an individuality, are supplied by the lives evolving in its sphere, and partakes of the nature of a group mind of the life of that planet. This is a subtle but important distinction, for it means that the higher self of the planetary spirit depends upon the lives dwelling on it for its development. A planetary spirit is a vast artificial elemental for which humanity builds a greater self, and while the planetary spirit determines the condition of all evolution and all function within its sphere, the higher aspects do not belong to it but are related to those planetary spirits who are its seniors. Therefore it is that, in relation to the Earth, the man who would attain the maximum evolution within her sphere, who would achieve the supreme humanity of the animal aspect, must make himself at one with the forces of the Earth and of her subtle self, the Moon. But it only by the influences of the planets that he can raise consciousness to the higher planes, and upon the tides of the planets he must make the transition. He who takes the Earth as his planet becomes earthbound, and the time is soon now, as cosmic time is reckoned, that the present human evolution will be withdrawn from the Earth plane, and therefore the advanced souls of that evolution do not find their development in communion with the Earth soul. It is to the children of the elements that Earth is an initiator, not to the children of men. The Earth and the Moon initiations are physical initiations and concern the fall into matter and generation. The planets may be assigned as follows: : the Earth to the plane of the dense physical, the Moon her satellite, to the division of it known as the etheric. Mars dominates the plane of the instincts and passions. Venus is the plane of the abstract emotions. Saturn is the plane of the concrete mind. Saturn, be it noted, is the formative influence. Mercury is the planet of the abstract mind. Jupiter the planet of the concrete spiritual. The Sun himself is the symbol of the Logos on the seventh plane. Conceived then each planet as the archetype of its plane, as radiating out its influence upon that plane and tuning that plane with its vibrations, and conceive each evolution as developing the corresponding factors within its nature when sojourning on a plane of the outgoing arc, and upon the returning arc aspiring to dominate those factors within itself and thereby to dominate the condition of the plane by means of the rapport thus developed with its ruling influence. The domination can only be completely achieved by securing the sympathetic cooperation of the planetary spirit. Now, as has been aforesaid, the planetary spirits are great but mindless entities, therefore each has assigned to it a guide, and these guides are of the first evolution, being lords of flame, and they are called the archangels of the spheres. It is through the knowledge of these the dominion of the planes is secured. For that reason their names are guarded, and known in their entirety to the Logos alone. For by the name in its entirety it is possible to command, but in the name in its consonants only it is possible to invoke. These archangels of the spheres have their own initiates who know the consonants of the names, and these are concerned with the evolution and regeneration of the planets to which they are assigned, as the masters, whom you know, are concerned with the Earth plane. Influence of the star Logoi. The star Logoi have nothing to do with the planetary spirits, with whom they are sometimes confused, but with the signs of the zodiac, for they represent the influences of the cosmos upon the solar system. They, likewise, are built up as artificial elementals to whom are assigned archangelic guides. But the rays, being older than the planes, are more highly evolved, and instead of being overshadowed as in the case of planetary spirits, identification is complete. The star Logoi are lords of mind. The elemental aspect of each star Logos is built up by the evolution which takes place under its influence, and a star Logos might be termed the group mind of the evolution. Each evolution builds a star Logos and thereby, as it were, focuses, stereotypes and tames that particular aspect of the cosmic influences through which it evolves. These Logoi remain in function after the cosmic tide, which called them into being, has passed away, and thereby the cosmic influences of that type are maintained in function in the universe, which evolution is developing into the form of a miniature cosmos, influences of other forms of life. Finally, there remains to be considered the influences of other forms of life evolutions of a later and earlier day in process of development. In the normal way, these do not influence each other at all, but being of different states of consciousness, though perchance occupying the same globe, have no point of contact. But under certain conditions contacts may be established, and these contacts are popularly known as psychism. Psychism is of two types: a. the perception of that which is below in point of evolution, and b. the perception of that which is above, and the earth. Being at the nadir, these two ways of seeing may be conceived of as looking back along the left-hand path, or forward along the right-hand path. It is permissible to look forward as far as the eye can range because that will lead the soul forward, but to look backward leads the soul backward, for where the eye looks the feet will turn. We may never look backward up the planes, we can only look across the planes from the involutionary to the evolutionary arc. Thus it is that those entities which dwell upon, or can raise their consciousness to, shall we say, the third plane, may minister unto those in their sphere who are upon that plane on the outgoing arc, but those upon the physical plane may not look at the involutionary aspect of a subtler plane until they have mastered its evolutionary aspect. The initiators of the physical plane are those who have attained perfection on the seventh plane. Initiators always function across the diameter. Upon a diagram you will see the significance of this, and the seventh initiates the first. Therefore man upon earth is bidden to worship not the nature forces of the second plane, nor the saints of the third, nor the masters of the fourth, nor the angels of the fifth, nor the archangels of the sixth, nor the Christs of the seventh, but the Logos himself, whose divine spark it is by which they live. But all through the intermediation of these hierarchies they rise to the consciousness of the cosmos, but they never pause or achieve finality upon any plane of the manifested universe, for there is no finality in manifestation. The first plane is the only plane upon which the initiation of the Logos is given, but it is this initiation of the Logos which marks the transmission from the involutionary to the evolutionary arc, for it wakens the divine spark which has well and truly been called the God within and which evolves into union with the God without. On the evolutionary arc, as he goes up the planes, man no longer looks straight to the Logos but to his immediate hierarchical superiors, but on the involutionary arc he neither looks back to the Logos, nor on towards matter, but across the diameter of the plane to his gods, who are the evolved entities who are withdrawing from materialization, and in their withdrawal have reached the plane to which he has advanced. Therefore it is that the primitive religions are along polytheistic lines. Monotheism marks the nadir of materiality and the transition from the involutionary to the evolutionary arc. The Jews, who first achieved this, are the most materialistic of all peoples. On the evolutionary arc the religions are not polytheistic for, having passed through the nadir, entities of this evolution have known the one God. They are, instead, obedient to the hierarchies, for that light which, when dimmed by the veil of matter, is bearable, would be unbearable, when matter no longer shelters. Therefore upon the subtler planes when consciousness is freed from the brain we never approach the Creator direct but always through those intermediaries who transmit and translate the force from plane to plane, of whom the group mind, or star Logos of our evolution is the ultimate. This teaching, you will perceive embraces the symbolism of the caduceus. You see the direct path from the base to the crown, and you see that the paths wind from side to side of each plane as the downflowing tide of life is made conscious of the higher aspect dwelling upon its plane, and the upgoing tide has to made aware of, and minister to the downflowing. The cosmic Christ, or star Logos, presiding over each evolution is a lord of mind, but as he is of the third evolution he will have the aspects of the earlier evolution in his nature. Therefore while three is the prime symbol of this evolution, because its Christ is three-aspected, four is the ultimate symbol. The Trinitarian aspect is the basis, but the Tetragrammatonic is the completion. This is the clue to much. Remember, never seek to explain anything in manifestation or out of it in terms of the static, for all is kinetic. Chapter 23. teaching concerning other evolutions inhabiting a planet simultaneously. In considering the subject of simultaneous inhabitation of a planet by different evolutions, it is necessary to realize that these fall into different classes: (a) those of the outgoing or involutionary arc, (b) those of the more highly evolved evolutionary arc. There may also be a third type of classification in which the types of life differ in kind instead of in degrees of development. We will proceed to enumerate and describe the different types of life which may be distinguished upon a given planet. First, there will be the completed entities of earlier evolutions. These are of the three types already known to you: the lords of flame, of form, and of mind. These function in their spheres as regents, planes, lords of behind the laws of their work. 7.6 Flame physics regents of the elements and givers of life, elementals are their servants. 5.4 Mind biology regents of the science of life. 3.2 Form chemistry enable force to function by confining it, the givers of death. 1 Humanity sociology developing human evolution. Interaction. The lords of flame are the lives behind all natural forces and the controllers thereof. The elements of inanimate nature are their children, created by the conceptual action of their intellects in the same way that the logoidal mind projects the manifested universe. A lord of flame conceives a function, and having himself evolved beyond the point at which he can develop further by this functioning, withdraws to a higher plane, and projects the concepts of that functioning to maintain the function. These thought forms, by experience, develop a personality, but have not yet arrived at an individuality, therefore they are spoken of as soulless. You will observe that the divine sparks develop, first a nascent individuality and then a personality, but the creations of the created develop, first a personality and then aspire to individuality. Therefore they are spoken of as evil spirits, familiars, demons and genii. They are not deliberately malevolent, but are incapable of response to aught but the lower aspects, when approached upon their own plane. Their sole link with the divine is through the consciousness of their creator. Therefore it is that those who would deal with them need to come with the authority of their respective originators of the different types of elemental beings. Then they become the messengers of God, for they are approached from their divine aspect, and the reflected divinity within them responds. Otherwise they are approached from the demoniacal aspect, and in their lower aspect they respond. These, the servants of the gods, maintain the coordinated rhythms of inanimate nature. They are the controlling forces of heat and light, of gravity and all dynamic reaction. The lords of this evolution rule upon the 7th and 6th planes as regents of the elements, or lords of the elements, as they are sometimes called, and, according to the operations of their nature, are the kinetic conditions of the manifested universe, and subject to this, man must perform the actions of his evolution. To these lords man must give unquestioning obedience, reverence to their greatness, and the gratitude which is due to those who, by taking thought, sustain the conditions of his being. To their servants or thought forms, the elementals, he owes the gratitude due to those who, by their nature, serve, but who serve unintelligently. Should he seek to approach them, he does so through the corresponding aspects of his own etheric double, but does so at his peril, for though they will first vivify those aspects, they will subsequently absorb them. Now be it known that these elementals are evolving upwards grade by grade through the personality towards individuality, and in the event of his making contact with them, some among them might fall to the temptation of black magic whereby evolution is illegitimately hastened, and seek to appropriate an already developed individuality and thereby establish their contact with the divine. In such an occurrence, the opposite to the ordinary form of obsession occurs: the personality is thrust out and an elemental consciousness takes its place, and of such an one it may be said that they have the stone of the earth, or a wave of the sea, or the wind of heaven, or a flame of fire for a heart, for human heart they have not, and because of the strength of the elements they call into the elemental in mankind with a profound calling, and such have always troubled the sons and daughters of men. For they come as beings of a strange and elemental power that know not the bonds that bind humanity, and they may be known by these things they ever seek their own kingdom and sorrow for it, for humanity for them is a crucifixion, and they ever call to the same aspects of men and women, and those who answer they destroy, for they are too strong for them. It may also happen that one who has made contact with the elementals, instead of being obsessed, may be mated. Then will the elemental aspect of their nature be linked to an elemental and yearn towards that unseen lover who is not of humankind. Then there is sorrow for that one, for they thirst with a thirst which cannot be slaked within the flesh. To meet their lover they must issue forth in the etheric form. Much might be said of this, but not now. Should a human being, however, seek contact with the lords of the elementals, he purifies those aspects of his nature which correspond to their kingdom until they become the refined essence of their qualities. In the stability of the earth he is stable. In the mobility of the water he is mobile. In the speed of the wind he is swift and aspiring. In the brightness of the flame he is zealous. Then, being lord of these things within himself, he is a lord of the elements in the microcosm, and may thereby claim kinship with the lords of the elements of the macrocosm, and the messengers of the elements are his servants. There is no other way than this. Those who use the names without the power invoke to their own destruction. The lords of form are they who govern all physical and chemical affinities, and to them applies all that has been said of the previous evolution. By their aid we may penetrate into the knowledge of the relationship of things, for form is but a coordinated relationship. The interaction between the lords of flame and the lords of form is very important, for the lords of flame are the givers of life and the lords of form are the merciful givers of death. It is from the lords of form that we learn the laws of death, the laws of escape and freedom. To master the forces of the lords of flame we invoke the powers of the lords of form. To master the powers of the lords of form we invoke the powers of the lords of mind. The lords of form are the laws of friction. They enable force to function by confining it, but by friction they disperse it. Therefore are the lords of form the lords of death, for they bring all things living to an end, and all things kinetic to a standstill, but they make actual that which is potential. They are the educators. Discipline is theirs, though punishment rests with the lords of mind. The elementals of the lords of form determine the nature of all chemical elements, combinations and reactions. The lords of flame are the laws of physics. The lords of form are the laws of chemistry. The lords of mind are the laws of biology. The lords of humanity will be the laws of sociology. In considering the question of other evolutions occupying the same planet, it must not be forgotten that if consciousness be raised above the physical plane to function in another state, it is thereby lifted from the sphere of the earth and comes under the regency of the planetary spirit corresponding to the plane on which it functions. This is a matter to be remembered in casting the horoscope of psychics. In this teaching, however, we will only deal with those influences operating on the earth sphere. These include those influences operating on the etheric subplanes while approaching the Earth on the involutionary arc, and those which also influence the Earth on the evolutionary arc. In the ordinary way, for the creatures of an evolution to look back to the conditions of a phase which they have outgrown is retrogression, and to be deprecated. Those who have immediately passed beyond the Earth's sphere are not permitted to look back lest they become Earthbound. Hence the evil of interference with the spirits of the recently departed, save for the purpose of giving quittance. There exists, however, a peculiar modification of evolution whose effects are known to you under the general term of the work of the Great White Lodge. In the ordinary course of evolution the wood grows with the growth of the trees. That is to say, that the perfecting of the individual souls perfects the group life. But with the coming in of self-consciousness comes a modification of group life, and certain souls choose the path of the Redeemer rather than the path of redemption. They elect to forego the fruits of their efforts and their good karma is added to the racial karma for its modification. Chapter 24. Influences which humanity exerts upon itself. It is not proposed in this teaching to recapitulate known facts in evolution, but rather to supplement that knowledge by the revelation of unknown factors, and the explanation of the implications of little known or misunderstood factors. In previous lectures we have dealt with pre-human evolutions and their influence upon humanity. In the present lecture we will deal with certain little-known influences which humanity exerts upon itself. Do not let it be forgotten that all evolution has a sequence in time, or technically, a sequence in cause and effect. And though the path of evolution be so broad that many are contemporaries, yet the evolutionary types have a well-marked sequence.